Constitution of the United States. For freedom and liberty. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much for joining us for this broadcast of the Freedom Message, but by Steve and Vincent on BBSRadio.com. The Freedom Message. The number to call into the show and participate is 877-270-8714. Looking forward to receiving your call and talking some Ron Paul with you, discussing today, focusing on the Sunday Fox News debate, which we didn't get a chance to discuss yesterday. We had an excellent interview with G. Edward Griffin, a great American. I was very pleased to have him on the show, and we're looking forward to having him back again. I'd also like to play for you the coverage on NBC, which aired, I believe this was Friday evening. NBC News did do a spot in on the primetime news show on Ron Paul and the Ron Paul movement, and we'll have a listen to that, and then we'll talk about that a little bit.
And now to presidential politics in this country, and a candidate who was thought, at the beginning of this whole process at least, to be at the far fringes of the debate with little chance to make much of an impact. But Texas Congressman Ron Paul's campaign has caught on with a lot of Republicans, some Democrats, some independents, especially on the Internet. Our report from NBC's Bob Fall.
To some, Ron Paul is the Don Quixote of American politics, forever tilting at windmills.
Get back to the revolutionary times and pick up the pieces.
He says bring our troops back from Iraq.
Bush has a horrible foreign policy.
Abolish the Federal Reserve System.
It's not constitutional.
Abolish Social Security.
It's gone. There's no money.
Abolish the income tax.
It's based on the assumption that the government owns us.
And I think the American people are tired of the iron fist approach to their lives.
He's getting more than applause. This summer alone, Ron Paul raised over $5 million from supporters like Brian Costin in Chicago.
We're out here to change our country.
Costin doesn't just organize Ron Paul rallies. He spends up to 4 hours a day touting Paul on the Internet.
It's a new age in politics.
Justine Lamb, for example, uses her hat cam to stream live Ron Paul's speeches and rallies.
And they're broadcasting it right now on the Internet, and it's on our website as well.
Results, scores of online donors, 40,000-plus friends of Ron Paul in more than 800 cities, where he's become the bon vivant of the blogosphere.
Congressman Ron Paul, thank you so much for joining me.
He's not just tapping into war fatigue.
Don't you think it's time we came home?
He's also tapping into their distrust of big government.
I'm mad as hell, and we're getting to the point where people are not going to take it anymore. He wants to get back to the way it's supposed to be.
The message of a Texas obstetrician who's delivered 4,000 babies and who's voted against so many government programs, he's been nicknamed Dr. No.
We don't need to depend on the federal government because it doesn't work, but I'm really saying yes to what has made America great.
Wielding Don Quixote's lance, bent, not broken. Boston, NBC News, Arlington, Virginia.
Okay, so that was a much anticipated report. Of course, we all knew that they would be doing it. We knew about the interview with Dr. Paul. We knew that they were going to be in Chicago covering the All-America Walk last Saturday or the Saturday before. And I think we kind of hoped for better. It wasn't the world's worst report ever, but I mean, it was okay. Let's put it that way. It was mildly above average, perhaps. You know, the reference to Don Quixote is unnecessary. I mean, it just seems like you can't get a report out of these people that doesn't in some way slander. Now, Don Quixote was insane, okay? Anyone who knows the story and knows that the reference, Don Quixote was nuts, okay? He had imaginary enemies that he was chasing after, you know, he was kept from disaster by his loyal sidekick who protected him at every turn. So what's the need to compare a dignified gentleman like Ron Paul to Don Quixote? I don't really see that that is necessary. They do start the report out by saying, well, Ron Paul has caught on. You know, he wasn't expected to do anything at the outset of the campaign, but they are, in fact, forced to admit that, in fact, he has caught on. So we got that out of him. The first the way they take Dr. Paul's interview with them and chop it up into literal three-word bites. I mean, he doesn't get a chance to express a full idea. He's only being used to paint a picture that they want to paint. So what's the first little dab of paint that they use from his audio? Well, we got to get back to revolutionary times. I'm sure this pulled completely out of context, but what it does is it makes him look like some kind of a person who's living in the past and, you know, is not, you know, with the modern age and, you know, wants to take us back to the past in some way. And that's a theme that we hear again later on in the piece, again, is reiterated. They casually throw out that he wants to abolish Social Security, which is simply not true. He, like everyone else, recognizes that it has no future, that the entire entitlement system that was set up has no future because fiscally we're not in a position to support it. The baby boomers are now filing for their Social Security benefits. The very first one did so last week. I reported that for you here on this show. The tidal wave of baby boomers asking for their money has begun, and we don't got the money. Okay, that's what Dr. Paul is saying there. You know, we don't have the money. We've got to get rid of it. You know, we've got to recognize that and plan for that. So it's just simply unfair to say he wants to abolish Social Security. I mean, what is someone's knee-jerk reaction to that going to be? Of course, if you're an older person who's depending on that Social Security check coming in, you know, you're certainly not going to have a positive view of this man. Again, over and over and over again, the emphasis of on Dr. Paul's online support. Now, I think it's a great thing, and it's perfect that Dr. Paul is the leader in online presence and online support, because that tells us that he's at the cutting edge. But they are trying to minimize and diminish the image of Dr. Paul as being merely an online phenomenon. Now, that could have been balanced by some decent shots of the well over 200 to 300 people that gathered for that Ron Paul walk in Chicago that day. Instead, the shots we got were of groups of maybe 5 or 10 people. You had no impression whatsoever of the size and the energy of that, the presence there that day. None whatsoever. Very disappointing. So, you know, as I speak of it, the less I like it. The less I like this report. And you know what? I'm getting used to it. Because I don't think we're very, very often going to see anything out of the mainstream media that even closely approximates true coverage of the Ron Paul movement, the Ron Paul campaign, the Ron Paul revolution. They're just not going to get it right. Whether it's through ignorance or intention, it's not likely to happen. If it happens, it's going to happen on the local level. It's going to happen on occasion. They just don't seem to miss any opportunity. They paint the supporters as people who are suffering from war fatigue. War fatigue. Okay, so people that are just basically worn out and they don't have the guts, you know, to hang in there with this war. They're just fatigued and worn out because they don't have it. They don't have the guts to hang in there in the war on terror. Those Ron Paul supporters are just a bunch of little wimps, you know? That's the implication. Maybe I'm being harsh. And if you think I'm being harsh, give me a call and let me know. And you know what? Maybe I'm not in a real good mood today, but this is how I feel, you know, when I watch that report. You know, again, distrust of big government. You know, it makes taken out of context without any supporting without anything around it to support that statement that Ron Paul supporters distrust big government makes us seem like paranoid. Just paranoid people who are discontented and are not with with reality. You know, that's just the impression that I get from that kind of a statement taken out of context. But they do end it up by saying that people are saying yes to Dr. No. So there's something positive there. All in all, not horrible. It wasn't an outright attack. It wasn't outright slander. But it wasn't what I would call anything even approaching a legitimate, accurate portrayal of the Ron Paul campaign and the movement around him. It really fell far, far short. With the kind of material that this movement provides. I mean, just think about it. Tens and tens and tens of thousands of people out there every day putting up signs all over the place, putting up banners over freeway passes, doing sign wavings, doing door-to-door canvassing, major rallies. They could have mentioned that in the 2 weeks prior to that, there were rallies of 1,500 people in Nashville, Tennessee, 2,500 people in Michigan. I mean, every single rally that Ron Paul attended in the weeks prior to that, well over 1,000 people. They easily could have mentioned that. I mean, isn't that news? Isn't that news, you know? News? That a candidate is drawing those kinds of crowds and you're doing a piece on this guy and you're not even going to mention the massive, just jaw-dropping crowds that he's drawing absolutely everywhere. You're not going to mention that this was before, okay, this was before New York, so they couldn't have mentioned the New York thing. I was going to say that, but I mean, they don't even touch on anything that is any of the elements that are the most dramatic and the most compelling about the Ron Paul movement. Very disappointing. Very disappointing. I guess I'm in a bad mood today, guys. I have to say, I'm not really in the world's best mood, and it's not about to get any better. I'm going to be honest with you, because now we're going to listen to the Fox debate. And if you think I'm in a bad mood now, wait till we get into this material. I guess we have to do it, so let's do it. The Fox debate in Orlando on Sunday. Let me go ahead and play this for you. I'm going to be interrupting this with some frequency, let's put it that way.
And now let's meet the candidates. Congressman Ron Paul of Texas, the 1988 Libertarian Party nominee for president, who is currently serving his 10th term in Congress.
Okay. Right off the bat, they separate him out from the pack by pointing out that he was the 1988 Libertarian candidate for president. Right off the top. Now, don't even try to tell me that's not intentional. That is purely intentional. That was thought up. That was determined ahead of time, you know, to right away separate him out and alienate him from the audience and from the debate.
Congressman Paul, to you, on the subject of one of the core debates in the party over social issues, gay marriage. You've been quoted as saying any association that's voluntary should be permissible in a free society, and you've expressed your opposition to a constitutional ban on gay marriage. Many of your rivals on that stage disagree. Why are they wrong?
Okay, well, if you believe in federalism, it's better that we allow these things to be left in the state. My personal belief is that marriage is a religious ceremony, and it should be dealt with religiously. The state really shouldn't be involved. The state, both federal and state-wise, got involved mostly for health reasons 100 years or so ago. But this should be a religious matter. All voluntary associations, whether they're economic or social, should be protected by the law. But to amend the Constitution is totally unnecessary to define something that's already in the dictionary. We do know what marriage is all about. We don't need a new definition or argue over a definition and have an amendment to the Constitution. To me, it seems so unnecessary to do that. It's very simply that the states should be out of that business, and the states should be able to handle this. The federal government should be out of it. There's no need for the federal government to be involved in this. You can accomplish this without waiting 5 or 10 or 15 years. You can go, but the authority can be put in the states by mere voting in the Congress.
So, not too much to say about that particular clip, except he rightly points out that it should be a state, an issue for local communities and states to decide whether they think there ought to be gay marriage or not on their level, in that, you know, this is yet another example of the federal government stepping into absolutely every element of our lives, you know, getting into marriage now and defining marriage and who can be married and who can't be married. So the Democrats want to have a constitutional amendment which makes gay marriage legal in all 50 states and imposes from the federal level that gay marriage shall be permissible, you know, and that is a right, okay? And the Republicans want an amendment which bans gay marriage and says that in all states and in all cases there shall not be gay marriage, it shall not be permitted, it shall be illegal. You know, so again, it's just the use of federal power, from a central level, very, very indicative of the attitude of both parties in general. And thank God for Dr. Paul to stand up there and make some sense and say, listen, why don't you just let people decide what they want to do, you know, because maybe in California they might want to have gay marriage legal because it's, you know, kind of like that in that society. And then you might want to have some other states where they don't particularly feel that way. They might want to choose differently for themselves. So pretty much that's that. Okay, so we have a caller on the line. We'll take a quick call and we'll get back to analyzing the rest of this Fox News debate in Florida on Sunday. Hi, we have somebody on the line there.
Yeah, it's Kathy from Los Angeles.
Hey, Kathy, what's going on?
Okay, I wanted to say that, you know, we should really give our feedback to the station of, we just talked about NBC.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, they need to learn to understand that we want accurate information when Ron Paul is being discussed.
Well, you know, they have. It's not like there's a dearth of material or a dearth of color or a dearth of information about Ron Paul and the movement around him. I mean, there's so much that you could do with that story. They just did nothing with it.
They twisted out. They just twisted their story around.
You know, it wasn't horrible, but what they're doing lately, even when they're on the surface level being sort of positive towards Ron Paul and his supporters, underneath they slip in these, you know, barbs, you know, and they slip in these insinuations. Right.
Exactly. You know, we need to have them on the show again or something to clarify these things.
Right. Well, you know, I do feel a little bit frustrated. I was really hoping for much better But
we all are, since he's gained so much money since the last quarter.
Well, they hardly did. Okay, there's another good point. Thanks for bringing that up. Here you are. You're doing this piece on Ron Paul, this surprise breakout candidate, okay? And you don't mention the major news story that's relevant to the campaign that had happened just 2 weeks prior, that he raised $5.1 million in the third quarter,
right,
blowing away all expectations and shocking the world.
Right.
You don't even mention it.
John McCain, he really needs to be pushed out because he's not qualified like Ron Paul is on gaining money or popularity or anything.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even mention it. It's just absolutely crazy. Well, it's likely that the crowd will start to winnow out a little bit. We've already seen Brownback drop out, and I'm sure that in the next couple of months we're going to see more people drop out. Well, we know who won't be dropping out, and that will be Ron Paul. He's going to stay in there for the long haul, no question about that.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, Kathy. I always like to get your calls.
Okay. We've got to keep hanging in and giving more money that we need to keep them, going to fundraising. The advertising.
Yeah, well, you mentioned something, the fundraising. I might as well bring this up right now. I was going to bring it up later in the show, but there's something going on that I'm going to go ahead and throw my support behind. At first, I was like a little bit on the fence about it, but people are organizing for people to donate on November 5th. To donate $100 to Ron Paul. And I was a little on the fence about it because although the idea, the concept is good, they're kind of tying it into this V character from the movie V, and V for Vendetta. And I don't like the association with that character because both the V for Vendetta character and the character that he's based on, which is the guy who tried to blow up the Parliament building in London, Guy Fawkes, were terrorists. They blow things up. And I kind of don't like that association, but I like the fact that they're trying to get people together on a specific day to donate all at once $100. And so far, I think they've got about 7,500 people, which is $750,000 if people actually do it and make that contribution on that day. That's a $750,000 bump for Ron Paul. That's not so bad. And they're only that's only after, I think, about 5 days. So between now, I think that what they're hoping to do is get their goal is 100,000 people signed up. I think that's a little bit lofty. But even if we only get 20,000 people, which seems to be if we've got 7,500 already after just a few days, it seems like 20,000 people should be doable by the 5th of November. And if people gave that, then that's what is that? That's $2 million. So that's not so bad,
That today we're getting more people on the board, and that's what we can do.
Yeah, so everybody on November 5th, there's a website for it, too. It's called, thisnovember5th.com, and you can go sign up there and pledge to donate $100 to Ron Paul on the 5th of November, and I think that's a really, really great idea, and I'd like to see that grow. So go ahead and spread that around, and go and sign up yourselves if you haven't already.
Right, I gave my max already.
You did already, okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people have, yeah. All right, well, spread the word, and thanks again for calling in. We're going to get back to the news. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you,
bye-bye. Okay, and again, if you wanted to call in and comment on my commentary or if you think I'm off base on any of this, because I'm not in a good mood today. I'll be honest with you. I might be a little bit harsh, but I'm going to go ahead and analyze the rest of this for you. And you have any comments, give a call into the show, 877-270-8714, 877-270-8714.
Well, Congressman Paul, you say that insurance companies and government programs have made health care simply unaffordable, and you objected so strongly to Medicaid that as a doctor, I'm told, you simply treated patients on their own, on your own, at your own expense. Is charity the way we should provide health care for the poor right now? And how are you going to encourage doctors to do that, primary care doctors to do that, when their salaries have been declining for more than a decade?
Well, we've had managed care now for about 35 years. It's not working, and nobody's happy with that. The doctors aren't happy. The patients aren't happy. Nobody seems to be happy except the corporations, the drug companies, the HMOs. You take care of poor people by turning the medical care back into the system where people have some choices. Now, we have a mess because we have a lot of people very dependent on health care, but I have the only way we can afford to take care of people now because we're going broke. We're $500 billion going into debt every single year, and we have a foreign policy that's draining us. I say take care of these poor people. I'm not against that, but save the money someplace. The only place available for us to save it is to change our attitude about running a world empire and bankrupt this country. We can take care of the poor people, save money, and actually cut some of our deficit. So you don't have to throw anybody on the street, but long term you have to move toward the marketplace. You cannot expect socialized medicine of the Hillary brand to work, and you can't expect the managed care system that we have today, which promotes and benefits and rewards the corporations, because it's the drug companies and the HMOs and even the AMA that comes to us and lobbies us for this managed care, and that's why the prices are high. It's only in medicine where technology has raised prices rather than lowering prices.
Okay, so there's a bit of a bit of applause there to that one, and I liked the way he handled that question. I think that what he's indicating is that the only way we're going to find the money to take care of people that need care, both in terms of the health care system and Social Security, which we mentioned earlier, is basically by eliminating the empire. He didn't quite say that, and that may not have come across to everybody that was listening to him make that point, but essentially that's what he was saying. If we eliminate the empire, then all the ridiculous expenditures that are going towards maintaining the empire overseas, maintaining the troops and the bases and the foreign aid and all of that, will be available then to help take care of people who need care during a transition period into a full market economy. So, and he basically breaks out of the paradigm, which is socialized care, Hillary care on one side, and managed care on the other, which is, they're often posed as the two choices you've got. You've got the choice of socialized medicine or managed care, and then there's no free market option. The only one who's bringing up a free market option on health care is Ron Paul. So, are we a free market economy? Or are we not? What kind of a society do we live in? Is this some form of socialism? Or do we live in a free country? So we're going to go ahead and play some more of that. And we do have a caller on the line. So I'm going to go ahead and take the caller now. Hi, you have somebody calling on the line?
Steven, yeah, this is Bob Pegram.
Oh, hey, Bob. How you doing? Thanks for calling
in.
How
are you?
Good. For those of you who don't know, Bob is a Ron Paul supporter in Southern California, and in Redondo Beach, yes, and he's certainly been an active member. And I mentioned to you last night that I was going to speak to a group of Republicans, and Bob is in fact the person who invited me down to speak to a group of CRA members. That's the California Republican Assembly. And I didn't know it was CRA until actually I got there, and I was actually pleased to find out that it was CRA. And I gave my presentation, and it was a very fruitful and interesting experience. And we're going to go ahead and talk about that in light of the comments that we're going to listen to from Ron Paul. It's interesting because what we're going to listen to right now in the Fox News debate and the reaction of the crowd to Ron Paul's position on the Iraq War. Well, let's put it this way. I didn't get booed at the Redondo Beach meeting of the California Republican Assembly, but there were certainly some people that had some thorny questions about the position of withdrawing from Iraq. And
to be fair to our membership, we had run an ad in the paper, and most of the people asking those questions were visitors, not members.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
That puts it in a somewhat different light. I had no idea. Okay. All right, thank you for letting me know that. Well, I guess then there was a sampling of some pretty committed Republicans. If they're going to be just showing up off of an ad in a newspaper to a Republican meeting, they're serious Republicans. So,
right.
You know, it's certainly a sampling of what I encountered and what Dr. Paul encountered in Florida on Sunday. So let's go ahead and listen to this, and we're going to talk about it a little bit. I'm going to play this clip for you now.
Congressman Paul, you're against the Iraq War. So is Senator Clinton. So what are the differences between you?
I'm going to just stop that right there. I mean, you're against the Iraq War. What's the difference between you and Hillary Clinton? Well, excuse me, but first of all, Hillary Clinton is not against the Iraq War. She voted for it, and she's already said multiple times that she anticipates that the war will go on for a substantial period of time, and that she anticipates it going into Iran, essentially. She's calling for the nuclear bombardment of Iran. So, you know, the difference between Ron Paul and Hillary Clinton is that Ron Paul is against the war in Iraq, and Hillary Clinton isn't.
There's a very big difference.
What's that?
And he's consistent about it.
And he's inconsistent. Exactly. Thank you. Let's go ahead and listen to Dr. Paul's reply to that.
The Iraq War. So is Senator Clinton. So what are the differences between you?
There's a very big difference. And I think the American people, if we as a party realize this and understand that 70-some% of the people in America want the war over with. They're sick and tired of it, and they want our troops to come home. Now, Senator Clinton...
Okay, I'm going to stop that right there. Something very interesting happened. I'm going to play the audio again, and you're going to hear, before the audience starts booing, you're going to hear somebody who is mic'd, somebody on the stage, and let's take a wild guess. Could it be Mr. Giuliani going, boo, cueing the crowd? Egging on, cueing the crowd to start booing. Listen again, you'll hear it. Again, he did the same thing a couple weeks ago at a debate. He started laughing at Ron Paul when Ron Paul was answering questions. Well, here he is, getting the crowd to boo. Listen.
If we as a party realize this and understand that 70-some% of the people in America want the war over with, they're sick and tired of it, and they want our troops to come home. Now, Senator Clinton...
Did you hear that? Boo.
I wasn't aware of that. I hadn't even caught that before.
Yeah. If you listen to it, I only caught it like the third time around. I heard this boo. What the hell is that? And I played it again. It's like, it's obviously somebody is... You can just tell from the tone of it, urging the crowd to start booing.
And you wonder how many people were in the audience who knew ahead of time that was going to happen.
Yeah. No.
Egged it on.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, let's give Dr. Paul a chance to answer the question.
If we as a party realize this and understand that 70-some% of the people in America want the war over with, they're sick and tired of it, and they want our troops to come home. Now, Senator Clinton has nothing new to offer. She's endorsing the same policy. She said that the troops would be there for another 5 years, continue to build this embassy that's going to be bigger than the Vatican, continue to build 14 air bases that are going on there, these private bases going on there, and never change. We in this party have to realize the American people are sick and tired of big government overseas, an empire we can't maintain, the bankruptcy of this country, and also the attack on our personal civil liberties. We don't have privacy left anymore, and Hillary Clinton offers no solution to that, neither does any of the Democrats, and we're not doing a very good job either. If we don't recognize that, we don't have a chance, because we need to get back to the basics, believe in the Constitution, believe in the rule of law, and not allow our government to spend endlessly and bankrupt this country.
Mr. Paul, thank you.
Okay, so there was some applause there at the end. And, you know, ultimately he handled the question, you know, quite well, you know, by showing that, in fact, yeah, you know, Hillary Clinton is, in fact, for keeping the war going. You know, we're in the Republican Party, you know, not doing any better by you know, keeping this war going and bankrupting the country, and, you know, bringing out the issue again of the affordability of this kind of a strategy and the viability, basically the viability of the strategy. What are your thoughts and feelings, Bob?
Well, Ron Paul has that's true on the specifics. The policy that we're doing now definitely will not work. In fact, as we talked about last night, it actually aggravates the situation as far as motivating certain members of Islam to hate us and want to attack us. It actually makes it worse and increases their number. More generally, what I was going to say is Ron Paul has the knack that not a lot of people have. It's something that's a trait of people who are very insightful. He has the ability to state things in such a way where people sit back and say, gee, I never thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And to really increase understanding of the listener.
Yeah.
As opposed to just repeating platitudes or, you know, worn out policies that don't work.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And, you know, last night when I was speaking with the group there, you know, we certainly had an exchange with people over this, pretty much the same, you know, issues as far as ending the Iraq War, and you know, I don't know, I was very, very surprised. I guess I wasn't prepared for the extent to which people are brainwashed with the ideology that the Arabs are out to get us. They will relentlessly attack unless we stop them. And you know, this is the reality of the situation that we live in, and that you know, we are in this like endless war of civilizations that's going to go on for, you know, a substantial period of time. Completely.
There are a few members of Islam like that. However, what we're doing is increasing their number, which is the exact opposite of what we should want to do. In other words, we're making the situation worse by being over in the Middle East.
Right.
And, I mean, there is a history of the Ottoman Empire trying to actually take over Europe. They were in Vienna in 1516, I think, is the year, although I may be a little off on that. And they had gotten into Spain, and they actually, the last step was getting into Italy, and they were fought off in the Battle of Malta, and that pretty much broke their back, and they went away for a long time. But it's not, the majority of people in Islam just want to be left alone and live their lives. And it, by what we're doing, we're actually saying, well, gee, I need to fight for, you know, what's going on here, for where normally they wouldn't do that.
Well, certainly. I mean, we've, you know, put bases in Saudi Arabia. We've been bombing Iraq for 10 years. We overthrew the government of Iran. And we've been meddling in the affairs of the Middle East for so long, and the chickens are coming home to roost. It's the blowback that Ron Paul has talked about, and we have to face it, and face it squarely, or we will be in this, you know, in a situation where we're in an unending war with an enemy that cannot be, you know, seriously targeted. When you're talking about terrorism, you're fighting a war against a tactic, I mean, you can't really fight it, you can't really identify when it's defeated. So, I was just a little bit surprised that so many people are completely bought into that worldview. And
even with the, you know, even assuming that the main goal of Islam is to take over the world, doing something that aggravates the situation isn't smart in any case. I mean, even if you give them the, you know, their initial assumption, their conclusion is still wrong.
Absolutely. You know, and we just really need to confront the reality of the situation and make some adjustments accordingly. That's what I was trying to indicate last night, that, you know, this policy just isn't working. We're getting the opposite result. You know, first you had no terrorism in Iraq, you know. Now you've got terrorism, you know. Now you've got, you know, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They weren't in Iraq before. You know,
and they came in to go after us.
Yeah, and you know, where are they going to export it to from there? You know, we went into that war on a lie. You know, we got to face the simple fact: we were lied to, manipulated into the war that the neocons had determined they were going to have, come hell or high water, one way or another. They were going to get us into a war in Iraq. It's just what they wanted to do for their own reasons, for their own purposes.
I read somewhere, I wish I could remember where, but the first, oh, I know, it was somebody who was in the cabinet. I can't think of his name. Paul, somebody. He said the first day they were in the White House after the inauguration, they already were having planning meetings for an Iraq war.
Yeah, Wolfowitz. Yeah, it's the Project for a New American Century. Bush's whole crew, PNAC, Project for New American Century. Cheney was one of the authors of this document, in which they indicated that they needed to go into Iraq, and they needed to divide it up into five different countries, and that's what they're doing. They've invaded it, they've destabilized it, and now they're going to partition it into five different countries. And you know, the graft and the greed and the just looting that's happening both from our treasury and from Iraq, you know, by the companies that this is like a private war. They hire companies like Halliburton and Blackwater and numerous other companies to go in there and do the jobs that are supposed to be done by the military, by the army, and you know, by you know, government forces. And it's basically you know, a handing over of fiat money cash straight to the cronies of the Bush administration. This is the reality now. And you go into a crowd like that, and you try to just make some some basic fundamental reality check on the situation and indicate things like that, and people get a knee-jerk reaction because they don't want to be told that, you know, this is happening from their party. They look at it in this, you know, dualistic view. Democrats over here bad, Republicans over here good. Even if they did make some mistakes, I'm going to stick by them anyway because they're Republicans and I'm a Republican. You know, and
right.
You know,
my team needs to win.
You know, you know, and you know, I mean, you know, if you've got a lousy coach and he's screwing up your team, you know what? You got to recognize, I got a lousy coach. He's screwing up the team. Let's hope we get a new coach on, you know, for the team, because the one we've got is really bad, you know, and that's what we've got in the Republican Party. You know, we've got really bad leadership.
Even worse than that, because a bad coach may still be following the rules. Our current coach isn't even following the rules, the Constitution.
You got that right. Well, let's listen to some more of this Fox News debate, and I'm sure there's a few more gems in here.
Of Medicare and Social Security. You said those programs are threatened with bankruptcy. They indeed are, as countless economists have advised us. If they were to be kept in their present form, it is argued that they could swamp the private economy with unacceptable levels of taxation or would force severe benefit cuts. You have stepped out on this.
It's a mess, and it proves that the government is not very good at central economic planning, even for retirement. But if the money was taken from the people with good intent, and we should do our best to return it to those that have taken it. But we need to allow the young people to just flat out get out of the system, because I tell you what, if you have the government managing these accounts, it's not going to work. And the other thing that you have to consider, if you're really serious about protecting people's incomes, each and every one of us, is how are you going to protect the dollar? If you don't have the dollar maintaining its value, no matter where you put the money, you're not going to have any value. That's where the crisis is coming. You're going to go up with all these cost of living increases, but you'll never keep up with the cost of living because the dollar is going down, the cost of living is going up. Our dollar today is worth 4 cents compared to the dollar of 1913 when the Federal Reserve took in charge of it. And if you don't deal with the dollar, there will be no retirement for anybody. We're going to have chaos. And that is why you have to cut spending. That's why we need a new foreign policy. We need to tie the people over here in this country, the people who are dependent, but we need to let the people get out, whether it's Social Security or medical care or education. The Constitution doesn't advise that we do any of that anyway. That's the only way we can solve the problem.
So Vladimir Putin is...
So, you know, basically, I think it's good that he got a chance to bring up the depreciation of the dollar, and again the need to cut spending, and you know, take care of business at home. In that particular clip, go ahead.
Stephen, can I mention something? A lot of people are not aware. Way back in the 1970s, the country of Chile in South America, southern South America, they actually privatized their Social Security. What they did, and it worked, what they did is they did require that people have a retirement account, but it was something that they controlled themselves. It just that they couldn't take all the money out. But anyway, they could invest it however they chose, and it you know, gained interest and that sort of thing. The older people who had paid in for a number of years still got their benefits until they died. And then there was a middle group where they could choose either to keep going in the program or opt out and, you know, start their account at that point, their private account.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked very well because the young people didn't want to be in it anyway. The middle group had their choice, and the older people were kind of in a, you know, over a barrel. They had to get those benefits because they were depending on them. So everybody pretty much got what was best for them, and it was an equitable way to get out from under that system so that people, again, had their own private retirement accounts.
Well, I think that, you know, we definitely need to be looking at a way of getting out from underneath this, you know, superstructure of socialism that's been created. You know, I mean, how did they, I just don't even know how they sold the concept to the American people that the government should be responsible for the retirement of...
Well, it's actually interesting. The insurance companies sued over it, saying you've got a private insurance system that the government's running. And it actually went, if I remember right, all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that it was not an insurance system, and then the leaders in Congress immediately were saying, oh, good, the Supreme Court saved our insurance system. It was a whole lot of two-faced hypocrisy. I mean, it's obviously, well, actually, it's not an insurance system in the sense that it's not fundamentally or fiscally sound, but it's an insurance system. System in the sense that it supposedly, not really, but supposedly protects people's solvency and being provided for in their old age. But yeah, it went to the Supreme Court, and the insurance companies lost.
Well, it's just pure socialism. I mean,
right.
It just doesn't. It does not square with the American system whatsoever, and it's not authorized by the Constitution, which is what Ron Paul was saying. Was saying there, so it may be a fortunate thing for us in the long run that it's hit a wall and is pretty much an unsavable program. But that in and of itself, the whole story of Social Security. It ought to be a cautionary tale in terms of where we're going to be going from here. We tried, in a sense, socialism to take care of people, and look what happened. It just didn't work, you know.
Well,
so
Social Security is also a good example of how corrupt the government is. In other words, a lot of people still think that there's this big fund of money somewhere that people have paid in and that they're getting paid out of that, but that's not the case. What happened is Congress took the money and spent it and put in IOUs, you know, the equivalent of savings bonds, except I'm sure there are different kinds of...
Well, the anticipation is that all of these...
IOUs saying, yes, we will pay that money back in future tax, you know, receipts.
Right. Well, the anticipation...
So the money isn't even there.
The anticipation is that all of these liabilities...
paid out the same year to the recipients.
The anticipation is that all of these liabilities are going to be paid for through more debt, you know, through through foreigners buying the U.S. Treasury bonds and financing these kinds of expenditures. And what's happening? Well, the U.S. dollar isn't quite the pillar of stability that it's supposed to be is dropping through the floor, and the Saudis and the Chinese and the Japanese aren't buying the debt the way they used to, and so the money's just simply not going to be there, not only for Social Security, but it's not going to be there for a lot of other things that that we've taken for granted. And what Ron Paul's trying to say is, hey folks, it's time to wake up. Things are changing, and they're not going to continue the way they are. They cannot. It is unsustainable. A favorite word of the of the left wing, you know, is unsustainability. Well, we've got an unsustainable, you know, socialist system, and it needs to end. Well, let's go and listen to some more of this Fox News debate.
Announced just in the last 24 hours that he plans a new, quote, grandiose nuclear weapons program to counter the U.S. missile defense system. Are we headed back to a new Cold War, or has the Bush administration been naive in dealing with Mr. Putin?
This is a result of a foreign policy of interventionism. The founders advised non-interventionism, and even our president won the election in the year 2000 to have a more humble foreign policy, not to go into nation building and not get involved in internal affairs of other nations. And we won an election on that. But here we are, we're over there, and we've invaded this country, and this is just another unintended consequence. The war is spreading. The war is likely to go into Iran. Nobody's willing to take anything off the table. What would it be like if somebody came in here into Mexico and did some of these things, say like putting missiles in Europe? We're just looking for trouble. It's so unnecessary, and we jeopardize ourselves, and quite frankly, we're not able to afford this. So we don't need to go looking for trouble. We don't need another Cold War. And all we have to do is start talking to people and trading with people. We don't need to assume that the world is going to blow up. Just think of when I was drafted into the military, and I served 5 years in the military, the Soviets had 40,000 nuclear weapons. And here we're now worrying about agitating and putting missiles in Europe. It's the Turks' business. It's not our business.
Congressman. Okay. So, again, that question of the war and of withdrawing from empire seems to be the boo, you know, kind of line, or the one that gets people riled up. And there was, of course, a little mix there of applause with the booing at the same time. But, you know, it does seem that a significant portion of the population has been effectively brainwashed with the ideology that, you know, we have the right to have an empire all across the world, that we have the obligation to make the world safe for democracy, that we have to, you know, make other countries be like ours, otherwise we're not safe. These are ideas, when you drill right down into it, that are as insane, equally as insane, as the Islamic notion of destroying the West through jihad.
Right, I have to agree with that. It doesn't deal with reality. It's more of a almost a religious fervor, in one sense, than just looking at reality objectively. There's another aspect of this that doesn't usually get brought up, which is the various international organizations like the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and a number of others, for years have helped fund countries by guaranteeing loans that they get from elsewhere, oftentimes from the West, from banks, and has helped prop up the Soviet Union as an organization is gone, but the countries are still there. Russia is still trying to be a threat. And we have actually helped them indirectly through those organizations that we should have nothing to do with. They're unconstitutional. They have international power and put us under rules external to the Constitution. We should have nothing to do with that. We've in some ways built our own enemies.
Well, that's certainly a theme that a lot of people would really expand upon. Someone like Edward G. Griffin, Edward Griffin that I had on the show yesterday, might actually pick up on that thread, Bob, and say, in fact, you know, we have often created our enemies, and question whether or not we haven't created and are in the process of creating this enemy of the Arab, Islamo fundamentalist fascist, who frankly didn't quite seem to appear to be much of a force until we started invading their countries. Now all of a sudden they seem to be, you know, gathering momentum, and we've got whole generations of Arab youth who are being inculcated with these ideas where they, you know, might have had other ideas previously. Saddam Hussein wasn't a great guy. Iraq had a dictatorship, and you know what? Countries are going to have dictatorships. Not everyone is going to be a constitutional... What's that?
It's not our job to clean them up. It's beyond the scope of the constitutional...
It's not our job. You know, we do not need to make the world safe for democracy. We do not, you know, need to make everyone exactly like us so that we can then feel safe from them. Countries are going to have dictatorships. It's just the way it's going to be. And we need to get along with them just as well as we do with the countries that have governments that may be somewhat similar to ours. And if we can't take care of our own home situation and really have a constitutional republic that we can be proud of here, you know, how are we going to go over to another country like Iraq and pretend that we're going to somehow help them, achieve democracy, whatever that's supposed to mean? Jay Leno had a good line on a show, and of course everyone knows Ron Paul's going to be on the Jay Leno show shortly on the 30th. And he said, oh, well, you know, in Iraq they're trying to draft a new constitution now, and they're having all kinds of disputes about what they should do. And you know, I had a thought. Well, you know, why don't we just give them our constitution? Because, you know, we don't appear to be using it anymore, so why not just give it to them? You know, I think that's that was a really good...
Yeah, the truth.
It's pretty much the truth. I mean, you know, I mean, we're not using it, so why not just give it away to someone else who could use it, you know, who really needs a constitution, you know? Let's put an ad in the paper, you know, used constitution, 200 years old, still runs well, you know, still runs well, solid under the hood, you know, solid under the hood, just been sitting in the driveway for a substantial period.
Ron Paul talked about trading with countries and being friends with them.
Mm-hmm.
Another indirect benefit of that is the countries that have the freest economies will tend to be the best trading partners.
Mm-hmm.
And so the countries that do have the socialistic economies will be penalizing themselves, and oftentimes they will switch to a more efficient, more free enterprise system on their own when they realize how inefficient they are. That's exactly what Vietnam did around 1980 or so, early, late 79 or 80, 81, somewhere in there, because they realized the communist system just didn't work.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Dr. Paul was talking about in this last clip. You know, he started out talking about interventionism and the unintended consequences that arise from it. He talked about how you know we're not willing, nobody's willing to take anything off the table in terms of the potential direction of conflict. He talked about that, you know, we don't need to go around the world looking for trouble, and why don't we talk to people and trade with people? And that's when all of a sudden people started to boo. It's really bizarre that on the talk to people and trading with people line, all of a sudden they start to boo. Is it because that we have this inculcated mindset that our way of interfacing with the world is through brute force and dominance? You know, in that somehow communicating, talking, trading, and seeking positive relations with all nations. What was the quote from, was it Jefferson or Washington, free trade with all and friends to many or something? You know the one I'm referring to?
I don't remember, but it's something to the effect of, friendship with all, what was it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember these.
Right, you know what I'm talking about, though. You know,
yeah.
This is what Ron Paul is echoing when he says that, and it's just, to me, it's slightly bizarre that people can't be just open to that. Now, I say that, yet, at the same time, obviously people are. Because people hear that, and lots of people, you know, intelligent, thoughtful, open-minded people hear that, and they say, wow. Now, that's not something I've heard from a politician of any kind on either party for quite some time. Someone who's thinking outside the box, and his head is not trapped in this in this box of conflictive rhetoric, you know, that everything is south through the barrel of a gun, you know, everything is south through coercion, through dominance, you know, that we're in, there's just the underlying assumption that we're in a conflictive situation with the world, you know, and that's just
I
the
found
way it
the
is.
Quote.
Oh, you found the quote.
I found the quote.
Okay.
Sorry. It says, commerce with all nations, alliance with none, should be our motto.
There it is.
Of Jefferson.
That was Jefferson. Okay. Yes. Well,
I think people aren't willing to back up and look at the whole forest. They keep looking at the individual trees, as the saying goes, and they won't back up and look at the big picture, I think, is part of the problem.
Yeah. And Ron Paul says at the end there, he says, you know, we have this, we assume that the world is going to blow up. And that way, I think, is his way of saying what I just said, you know, that there's this underlying assumption of conflict, you know, or of disaster, and that is we're necessarily headed towards war. It just has to be that way, you know. And it's so brave of Dr. Paul to challenge that and call upon people to question, hey, does it really have to be that way, you know?
But if common sense tells you it's to nobody's advantage to blow up the world, even if people want to take us over, they want to take us over in one piece, not all broken down.
Mm-hmm.
I have another quote here of Jefferson, which I think is very appropriate given the Rand Paul Revolution slogan. His quote is, every generation needs a new revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go with Ron Paul.
Yep, there we go.
A revolution going back to our founders.
Well, getting back to how to address these questions, is I think this is what we're really talking about here. You know, my experience, our experience last night in speaking with the CRA members and the visitors and the Republicans at that meeting, and Ron Paul's experience at this debate. You know, I think it comes down to being able to ask people. Maybe that's a really important way to approach it. Being able to ask people. I want you to just question your underlying assumptions for a moment, because if we don't question the underlying assumption of conflict, the underlying assumption of war as necessary, let's have a look at where this is really going if we don't. First of all, we know that it's going towards a wider war with Iran. We know that it's a war that's going to go on for generations. It's going to drain all of our natural resources. It's going to drain all of our the energy of our nation. It's going to drain our financial resources. It's going to bankrupt the country. And it's going to kill tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of our young men and women. And not to mention the loss of life on the other side. I mean, this is guaranteed. If we continue the course of action on the assumption that we're in a multi-generational, unending war against terror that's going to cover the globe anywhere where there are Islamic fundamentalists, and we're going to be taking this fight to them. I mean, if that's the assumption, that's the pretty picture that you've got to look forward to. Okay, and that's just, you know, and that's just the surface. That you know, there's a lot more. What else is in that picture? Well, if you're going to assume that we have to buckle down and clamp down in order to win this war on terror, then we're going to be losing what little we have left of our freedoms, of our Constitution in this country, because we are going to be gradually sold, as we have already been sold, on the notion that our freedoms are getting in the way of winning the war. And that's what we've got right now with the loss of the due process, with the Military Commissions Act, you know, with the establishment of torture as a normalized practice, with the establishment of secret courts, both in this country and around the world, and the list goes on and on and on of government spying on our on its people without any kind of check. With increased concentration of power in the executive branch, and the Congress increasingly abdicating its role of creating a check on the executive, all of this.
There's almost no check at all.
Right now, there's no check at all. I mean, you're right. And with the presidency coming closer and closer to being a dictatorial position, and Ron Paul recognizing this, he presented to Congress the American Freedom Agenda Act to roll back all of what I just listed, you know, roll that back and reestablish the checks on the imperial executive, and reestablish some balance of power in Washington, in the federal government. You know, I think these are the ways that we can address that question. I think what we first need to do, though, is really point out to people what is the logical end to the framework that you are supporting, the framework of the Islamic fundamentalists are out to get us, they're going to wipe us off the map if we don't fight them, if we don't fight them over there, we're going to have to fight them over here. If you hold on to that, where is that actually going to take us? Let's have a look. Present that, and then I think you can maybe start to talk some sense into people. What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Get people to back up and look at the whole picture. In doing that, also, one thing I'll try to do is, in all their statements, in asking the question, I'll try to find something in there that does have a grain of truth, if I can. Sometimes there isn't anything. And so, as far as such and such thing you said, that's true, and, you know, say something to kind of affirm it. And then, without saying however or but or anything like that, just go on to something else and point out the things you're talking about. So that way it isn't such an adversarial discussion. Rather, it's, mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with you on this one point, and let's look at this other stuff too. So, you know, let's look at the truth together and see what we can find out.
Sure. And I think it's important for us to start...
You should have a better picture of it than they do.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to start having these conversations, because right now in the campaign we're transferring into the mode of going door to door, and we're going to be in positions where we're going to have to talk to people. I mean, I think sometimes you just want to hand people a piece of literature and walk on, but you know, we're going to have to be talking to people. Everyone out there who's listening to this, if you're engaged in the campaign, if you're going to be, you know, supporting Ron Paul for president, at some point you're going to have to talk to somebody about these issues. So it's really good for us to start, you know, really formulating our responses and thinking about how would I address this really difficult. And of course, we can always take our cues from the way Dr. Paul answers these difficult questions and how he's treated. So, you know, with such
and the way
disrespect.
He wins with the average person, not necessarily with somebody he's debating, because the average person isn't expected to know everything about politics, mm-hmm. although he should have a basic knowledge. When he's debating somebody who's running for president, they have no excuses, so he'll be pretty abrupt with them because they need to, you know, some of the things they say are so absurd. Where with the average person, he is very polite and will explain things with patience. Also, we should never argue with somebody who does want to argue if we go to their front door. If they're asking a legitimate question, great, but if they just want to argue, you just say thank you very much and go to the next one.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that you don't want to get into arguments, because some people just like to argue for the sake of argument. You know, and
right.
I don't think that's really what we need to be doing. And I think most of the time, you know, making sure that, you know, that they have the information that they need to be able to go to the website and watch the videos and read Dr. Paul's statements, and that should take care of it. But you know, it's going to be pretty tough to avoid having to talk to some people at, you know, some time. So we need to be better prepared. Let's listen to the rest of Ron Paul's comments here on the Fox News debate from Sunday.
Paul, I want to start with you. You have drawn some of the strongest reactions of any person on the stage, both pro and con, sir. When Ronald Reagan became a Republican, he said he hadn't left the Democratic Party, the Democrats had left him.
Given your differences with the other gentleman on the stage, has the Republican Party left you? Have these gentlemen left the Republican Party?
Well, I'm going to pause that right there. You know, this is at least, minimum, the third time that that same question has been asked of Dr. Paul in a debate. They ask it, you know, oh, shouldn't you be in the Democratic Party? Are you in the wrong party? You know, I mean, they keep asking the same question in different ways. What, you know, I don't believe that that's an accident. You know, again, another attempt to create the idea just by the question itself. Just by the question itself, to create the idea in people's minds that Ron Paul is somehow separate from the Republican Party, the way they set it up at the very beginning of this debate and introduced him as the 1988 Libertarian candidate for president. I don't believe that that was a mistake.
Well,
you know?
Well, ironically, though, there are many Democrats who support Ron Paul because they recognize the truth of what he's saying, unlike the other Republican candidates. And so, you know, like there's Democrats for Ron Paul, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually, in some ways, backfires in that it gets Democrats to say, well, maybe I should listen to this guy. And, you know, they can register as a Republican.
Well,
Ron Paul in the primary.
That's the rub, though. That's the rub, though. You know, I was out on Saturday and, Sunday, I should say, and we were, you know, doing our thing out there at the Sherman Oaks Street Fair and meeting lots of people. Yeah, I like that Ron Paul. Okay, well, have you registered yet? Oh, no, I'm registered Democrat. Oh, well, you know, to vote for Ron Paul, you do need to register Republican. Here, come over to the table. Well, I've got registration forms right over here. Let's go ahead and take care of that. No, I can't. You know, Ron Paul is really great, but I just, you know, I can't register Republican. I just,
There are.
But, boy, we have our work cut out for it. I guess my point is that we can't just assume that because we know that we are reaching a lot of independents and Democrats, we can't just assume that they're going to make the switch. We have to really be active and proactive in actually making that happen by going out there with registration forms, getting them to sign on the dotted line, and that means going door to door, which is what we're starting out with this weekend. We're going to be going door to door in Sherman Oaks. We're going to do a test run on our canvassing here, and we're going to see how it goes and start getting trained because we don't have a lot of time. I mean, let's look at a calendar right now. We're close to the end of October. Essentially, we've got 3 months between now and February 5th. You know, we've got...
What we do have that none of the other campaigns has is great numbers of people in the meetup groups who are active and are willing to do this. The other campaigns have very few local people on the ground. We have a huge advantage in that area.
Right.
And if everybody gets involved, we can cover an enormous number of precincts,
right,
and various districts.
If we get out there and we purposefully meet the people that we need to meet, and get their names and numbers and addresses, and get a commitment for their vote for Ron Paul on February 5th in California. It's February 5th, and we do that, and then we follow up with those people and actually get them to the polls. We got a shot, but it's going to be a lot of work. So people out there, you're listening. You know, it's great that you do all this stuff online, text polls, donating, all of this stuff. It's wonderful, but now's the time. It's official. The bell has rung. We need to hit the streets. We need to organize the vote. We need to reach those people, get them registered, get them lined up, and turn them out at the polls. This is the next thing that, I mean, everything else is absolutely worthless if we don't do that.
This is an opportunity of a lifetime. Ron Paul is the kind of a candidate who doesn't come along in decades.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have an opportunity here that we aren't going to have in a long time.
Bob, it's not only is it an opportunity, it's also, not only is it an opportunity, it's also an obligation. Because we are obligated to our future, to our children, to our grandchildren, to future generations, to step up right now. Because if we miss this opportunity, there's a good chance we don't get another one. And we already know where things are going. Dr. Paul speaks about it. I mean, we're in some prototype of a dictatorship already. You know, we're in a proto dictatorship. You know, when does it go full bore? When does the Constitution get officially flushed? you know, instead of gutted, when does it get officially flushed? Hard to say, but things are certainly moving in that direction. So, you know, and with the technological means that is available to any would-be despot or despots, you know, or, you know, any kind of oligarchical, you know, collective type of a, you know, despotism, the technological means that are available, I mean, Hitler would have just, you know, he would have been terribly excited by the possibilities that are offered by the technology of today. And the would-be Hitlers that are among us now and that are leading this country and leading both parties, they see it and they know, whoa, we could get away with so much, you know. So this is where we're really at right now. It's not a joke. It's not just some, you know, wild ramblings of crazy lunatic fringe conspiracy theorists. I mean, this is really where we're at today. I mean, we don't have habeas corpus anymore. They declared it out of existence. They can declare you to be an enemy combatant. They can sequester you, hold you without trial and without legal counsel. They can torture you. They can do whatever. You know, I mean, this is where we're at today. They surveil your phones at whim, at will. You know, your email communication or whatever. We already know that they're doing it. They've told us that they're doing it. We're supposed to believe that it stopped. Yeah, right. So this is where we're at. Let's go ahead and listen to the rest of Ron Paul's speech here, answers to the questions here, and then we'll wrap this up.
Well, I think in many ways they haven't followed our platform and they don't follow the Constitution. So they're really not following a conservative viewpoint. Yes, I think in many ways we have become big spenders. Republicans are the big spenders. They're big government conservatives. They're part of the neoconservative movement. They've lost their traditions about traditional conservatism and the Constitution. We have benefited for so many years and decades by having a position of less use of force. Eisenhower won his election in 1952 by trying to clean up the mess the Democrats created in Korea. Nixon won in 68. We continuously won in taking this position of a more commonsensical foreign policy. Like I said, even George Bush won criticizing this interventionism, and now all of a sudden, just in this short period of time, we have accepted the Democrats' position on foreign policy, on entitlements, on deficits. I mean, we have lost our way. No, I think that the position of the Republican Party today has not fulfilled their traditions, and that's why we lost last year. And if we don't go back to our traditions and believe in the Constitution, limited government, personal liberties, and a foreign policy that's non-interventionist that won't bankrupt us so that we can defend this country, we can't even defend our own cities while we're prancing around the entire world.
So I like that, I wish he'd ended by saying we can't even defend our own borders, but other than that, I mean, I think that was a good summation of what people sort of need to hear, but in a forceful way, in a strong way, I should say, rather than forceful, mm-hmm. You know, and
so we're even sending some of our border officers to Iraq. Talk about having the priorities upside down.
Right. Yeah, and he raises that point quite frequently, you know. He summarized in a few words there, you know, the scope of the situation. And, you know, hey, it takes something to get in front of, well, you know, I did it myself last night, you know. I got up in front of a Republican crowd and basically told them, you know what, you know, we've lost our way. You know, we don't have the Republican Party that we're supposed to have. We're no longer defenders of the Constitution. You know, we're no longer the defenders of small government. You know, we're no longer about a non-interventionist, you know, a foreign policy, and it's tough to get up in front of those people and say, you know, you've lost your way, but you know what? It's got to be done. It's got to be done.
Right.
Somebody's got to say
one
it.
In that group that I'm in, that chapter, I was the only Ron Paul supporter, and now there are two others. And it's just by giving people stuff to read. In other words, when people have something to read or watch, like a DVD or YouTube
mm-hmm.
or whatever, it isn't you versus them. It's a separate piece of information from somewhere else that gets the adversarial relationship out of it.
Yeah.
And
well,
so that's something that's very important. If there's somebody you think might all be interested, give them something to read or something to watch. and then they can digest it and see what they think.
Absolutely. Well, I'll certainly be curious to get an update on that and hear what the results were. At the next meeting. When is the next meeting?
They're once a month. They're the fourth Monday of the month. So yeah, I'll let you know what feedback I get.
Mm-hmm.
And one person I didn't know, she sent me an email today. I didn't know she supported Ron Paul, and she sent me something stating that very obviously. And then there was another person who was obvious did support him. So that's three of us. And also the head of our group is saying she now thinks that Ron Paul is the only one who can defeat Hillary Clinton.
Oh, the woman that was sitting at the head of the table?
Yes.
With me? Okay, yeah, she seemed like she was pretty cool. Well, that's great news. And, in fact, there was a poll that came out. Let me find that for you, if you want to bring up that subject. There was an actual poll that came out. Ron Paul polls strong against Hillary Clinton among 30- and 40-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Paul leads Hillary Clinton among 40-year-olds. 47% to 44%, and is polling strong against her among 30-year-olds, according to a Rasmussen Reports poll of 1,200 likely voters taken from October 12th through the 14th, 2007. So that's pretty interesting.
That's very encouraging.
Yeah, I don't know what a Rasmussen Report poll is.
I've heard the name before, and apparently it's one of the respected ones, but I don't know much specific other than that.
Mm-hmm. I've gone to the it's on and if anyone wants to check that, it's on usaelectionpolls.com. usaelectionpolls.com. Thanks to Samantha, a listener who sent that in to me. Listeners frequently send in little bits of information that are useful, and thank you, Samantha, for sending that in. And if anybody else has anything they want to send my way, the email address is freedommessage@sbcglobal.net, freedommessage@sbcglobal.net. And the website is www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com, ronpaulfreedommessage.com, where you can also find archives of the show in case you happen to not be able to listen to it live. You can always listen to it archived. And a couple of announcements. On tomorrow's show, I will have a very good guest. I'm very lucky to have someone who helped Ron Paul draft the American Freedom Agenda Act. And his name is Bruce Fine, and he is with an organization called the American Freedom Agenda. And he will be my guest tomorrow for probably close to an hour. You can call in to ask him questions. And he is a former assistant attorney general in the Reagan administration, and also has been a guest on just about every major news program. He's someone, you know, who's certainly in the flow of things in Washington and in the media. So he is one of the authors, essentially, of the American Freedom Agenda Act, and he will be on with me live tomorrow. So please tune in for that. Another announcement is that the Freedom Message is going visual. Soon you will be able to go to my webpage, www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com, and watch the show as well as listen to it. That includes being able to see the clips. Frequently I'll be playing YouTube, you know, or Google video clips on the show. You'll actually be able to see the clip as well as listen to it. So it will be basically like watching a news broadcast. I'll be mixing my live video together with the clip video that I'm playing. Also, if we're able to get a guest in front of a camera, their video will come up on the screen. You'll be able to see them as I interview them, as well as hear them. So, and you'll still have the option of listening as a radio broadcast if you want to as well. So very exciting news. That's hopefully I'll have that up and running by Thursday. Pretty much is all ready to go. I just need to kind of get comfortable with the interface of the software and, you know, make it happen. I'm sure the first few times it's going to be a little bit, you know, a little bit unstable, and you know, there'll be problems of some sort when there always are in this kind of thing. But we're going to go ahead and try that out on Thursday, unless I have an important guest on, in which case I might not want to mess with it while I have an important guest on. But look for that on Thursday, and I just want to thank you for calling in, Bob, and sharing your thoughts and ideas. Anything else you wanted to add?
We've got a wonderful opportunity here, and to take advantage of it so you don't look back and regret, well, gee, I should have done that. This is your opportunity. Get the literature. Get involved with the meetup groups so you can get involved in the precinct walking or sitting at tables talking to people. And I think you'll have a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better. You know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and we need to make absolutely the best of it, and we've got this tiny window of the next few months to work with, so let's all make the best of it. I'm going to go ahead and end with a new Ron Paul song, and it's called The Ron Paul Blues, and you can go ahead and listen to that off the air, Bob. I'm going to play Ron Paul Blues by Ralph Buckley. Thank you.